Chardon. Hey, true crime fans. Welcome back to another episode of Chardon. Hey, true crime. I'm your host, Dakota. With me, as always, is the lovely Kate.
That's me.
That is her. And tonight, we are going to be talking about what is most commonly known as Heaven's Gate.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you've been waiting on this one.
I've kind of been pushing for this for a little while, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, you've been excited about this one.
I mean, when it comes to cults, in my opinion, this is the quintessential cult to discuss. It's more interesting to me than Jonestown, and I will explain why. Heaven's Gate is an elaborate story. It's sad. There are some manipulative parts. It'll make you angry. But most of all, it is a story about belief and the human desire to have something or someone to believe in and to have something or someone to give all of the answers.
Yeah, humans really are just desperate to believe in something.
It's true. And you would know as someone who went to a Christian high school.
Yeah, I kind of fell into that for like a hot second too. Mm-hmm. Like there was literally like a 2 month period where I just like decided like, you know what? I'm going to put my effort into this. I'm going to choose to believe in this and see what it's all about. And it didn't do it for me. It just wasn't it.
This didn't work out for you.
It really didn't. I felt something for a minute, but it was literally a fake it till you make it thing, and I exclusively faked it.
I get that. But so we do have a lot to cover in this series, so let's get it started. On March 26th, 1997, the San Diego Sheriff's Department discovered 39 bodies in a house in Rancho Santa Fe.
San Diego, represent! I'm always so excited when anything's in my area.
I know, right?
But the bodies were all dressed identically. It was 29 women and 18 men who had accidentally been reported as all men by the media at first because of their unisex haircut.
Yeah. Now included in the dead was the leader of this group, Marshall Herf Applewhite. Now, before we get to talking about everything that happened after the suicide, we have to talk about how we got there.
Pardon me. Excuse me.
Good?
Yeah, it's been a long day.
I get that.
Yeah, natural progression of things. Start at the beginning. But even before we talk about that, we need to cite our sources on this series. So mm-hmm. First... Dakota has gone off of the book Heaven's Gate, America's UFO Religion by Ben Zeller. And then the second is the podcast Heaven's Gate on Stitcher. And the third is the HBO series Heaven's Gate, The Cult of Cults.
Yeah, and all of those are true. But our final source is the most interesting source, in my opinion. I emailed the two remaining members of Heaven's Gate through their website and have been communicating with them back and forth. Their only request when I was communicating with them about this series is that I send them the information that we are going to release so that they can correct any of the long misrepresented information. And while I'm fine with that, obviously, I'm sure there are going to be things that they dispute that have been corroborated by former members of the group. So I'm going to use discretion when it comes to that sort of situation.
Yeah, just... having that balance and like still just like being respectful about it.
But exactly. I strive to be respectful to the people who are still living and to the people who are dead. However, I do recognize that the living have a reputation to uphold.
Mm-hmm.
And while I do want to be respectful of that, I also recognize that there are going to be things that they claim didn't happen, but that other members claim did happen. So we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah. So let's just start building the bridge first. So with that, let's get started with Heaven's Gate Part 1, The Two Witnesses.
Now, it is impossible to talk about Heaven's Gate without first talking about Bonnie Lou Nettles. Without Bonnie, this whole thing never would have happened. And while, yes, it was two of them who started this group and in this situation, it takes two to tango, I think that Bonnie was the one who took the reins more often than not.
Yeah, it takes two to tango, but there's still one person leading.
And that was Bonnie, in my opinion.
Yeah. Bonnie Nettles was a mother of four, a nurse, and not actually a very religious person. She had been raised a Baptist, but she didn't really follow Baptist religion as much as you would think from a woman who started one of the most infamous groups ever.
Yeah, that's all true. Now, some of what we know does come from her daughter, Terry Nettles, who I did find on Facebook, but chose not to reach out to due to the number of her Trump and Jesus posts. Just a personal choice there.
I support that choice.
Thank you. Thank you. But anyways, Bonnie Nettles, while she wasn't conventionally religious, she was a self-proclaimed spiritualist who claimed to channel spirits, including a 19th century Franciscan monk named Brother Francis. She also claimed to channel the spirit of Marilyn Monroe at one point. Yeah. Yeah, and many others. But she held seances in her living room, she was interested in UFOs, and she wrote a weekly astrology column in the local newspaper. She was married, I think, at the time that she met Marshall Applewhite, but the marriage had been pretty disconnected for a while, though to what extent, I'm not entirely sure. But what is known is that she divorced her husband in 1972.
Was that before or after she met Marshall?
So it's hard to tell. I know that she got divorced in 1972, and I know that she met Herf in 1972. Okay, now I don't remember. I may have actually just totally messed up on that. But let me just check really quick. Yeah, they met in 72, and she got divorced in 72. So I don't really know.
Yeah, could be some overlap there, but I mean, yeah,
there definitely could be some overlap. We're not 100% sure on the timeline of this. It is very murky at best.
But I mean, like, if the marriage was over, the marriage was over. So, I mean, like, I'm not going to be too mad about it regardless.
No, exactly. Now, Bonnie was close with her eldest daughter, Terry, who was like something of a miracle child. She had had a couple of miscarriages before she finally had Terry. So there's that. She was really happy to have Terry. They were both really big fans of The Sound of Music, which will come up again when Herf and Bonnie start calling themselves T and Doe.
I forgot about that.
And they also love to talk about UFOs. Like, there was one time where Terry talks about her mom being home from work and they're sitting at the kitchen table and her mom is like paying the bills. And then all of a sudden she just got up and went out back and Terry followed her and they just sat there and stared up at the sky and talked about how amazing it would be if a UFO came and picked them up right then and there.
I think we've had conversations like that.
Yeah.
We should start a cult.
Listen, it is actually extremely easy to start a cult, and I will explain why another time.
We should start a cult. Of course, we should start a cult.
Oh, God. I actually thought about that when I was like 14. I decided that I wanted to start a cult and I made a logo and everything for it.
Oh my God.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you and I.
Needless to say, I have been interested in this topic for a very long time.
You and I had very different interests as teenagers.
Yeah, that's for sure. But anyway, so yeah. I think it's important to talk about this because the UFO thing would follow the group throughout the entire 22 years of the class.
And tell us about the class.
So I will explain the class, but not quite yet. First, we need to talk about Marshall Herf Applewhite. Unlike Bonnie, Marshall was more of a religious person. He was from Texas. He was the son of a Presbyterian preacher. He attended Austin College in Sherman, Texas, and was the leader in an a cappella group. He was on the judiciary council of his church, or school, sorry, and was in the Association of Prospective Presbyterian Ministers and got his degree in philosophy.
Whew.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. And like son of, like the son of a preacher, like.
He was the son of a preacher man.
It's like, you're either going to like follow that or you are going to completely defy it. There is no in between.
Somehow he managed to find the in between.
Oh shit. Yeah. You know what? You've got a point there.
He managed to find the in-between. He did. Like, I understand what you're saying. In normal cases, there is either no in-between or there is an in-between. And this guy found it. This one right
here. This guy made it.
He created the in-between. Anyways, so he enrolled in the theological seminary, which was a Presbyterian divinity school, but then left to study what he considered to be his true calling, music. He spent a few years in the army and earned a master's degree in music and voice at the University of Colorado and was the director of the chorus at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Houston.
Did he follow that belief of like not getting married that they teach in the seminary? Because I know that's a thing.
So I don't know if that's a thing with Presbyterians, considering his father was a Presbyterian minister, but yeah, so I don't know if that's Presbyterians or if that's just Catholics or what, but we're going to go with no. He actually married a woman named Ann Pierce and they had two children, but divorced in 1968 and were estranged from then until his death in 1997.
Hmm. Do we know why they broke up?
Yes. Yes, we do. You see, a man born in 1931 in Texas, as a man born in 1931 in Texas, the idea of homosexuality, or more likely in this case, bisexuality, was extremely looked down upon, and Herf had a relationship with a male student and was caught.
What?
He and Anne broke up after that and in 1965, before the divorce, but after the separation, he moved to Houston and spent some time living as an openly gay man, which honestly is so brave. Because you got to remember, it's the 60s in Texas.
It's the 60s in Texas, and he had a religious upbringing. Like, he literally was a child of the church.
Yeah, exactly. So I gotta say, like, if good for fucking you, Herf. Good for you, man.
Yeah, it's hard not to give him props for that.
It really is. His students adored him, and he was a locally popular singer, but he also started a relationship with a young woman who left him after being pressured by her family. Herf was very upset about that and resigned from the university he was working at in 1970 and moved to New Mexico and opened a deli. However, in 1971, his father passed away and he moved back to Texas and things were just piling up on him. And I'm sure all of this was taking a huge emotional toll on him.
Yeah, no kidding. Because, I mean, it's just one thing after another for this guy, huh? Just like, get married. Oops, I'm gay. Get divorced. Move. Open a deli. My dad is dead. Mm-hmm. Move back to Texas.
Exactly. I mean, honest. And don't forget the relationship with the guy and the relationship with the girl.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Like that all, I feel like that all happened in like a like real quick succession.
About 5 years.
Yeah, that's a lot to deal with in 5 years.
Yeah, it really is. So there's, well, I, I don't know if I'd call it a silver lining for this. Maybe for the people who were happy to follow them and devoted their lives to this group, it was a silver lining. But the outcome is he met Bonnie Lou Nettles in 1972.
Whoops.
Ding. That was honestly perfect.
Yeah, that was really funny.
So he met Bonnie Lou Nettles in 1972. Bonnie's getting a divorce in 1972 before or after she met her. We don't know, but yeah.
And how did they meet?
So they actually met in the hospital that Bonnie worked at in Houston. Now, there are several stories for why he was in the hospital. Some say that he had to have an operation. His sister claims that he had a massive blockage in his heart and had to have a life-saving operation for that. Some say that he was there under a psych evaluation.
If that is what was going on, like, with everything that he had gone through in the past 5 years, like, yeah, I could see him needing some extra help, whether it's his heart or his brain, like, regardless.
Honestly, yeah. Though, to be fair, the person who claimed that he was there for a psych eval was a reporter named Evan Thomas, who was never able to provide evidence for that claim, nor was he ever able to tell anyone where he had heard that from. So the theory is basically the vaccines cause autism of the Heaven's Gate history.
Mm.
Yeah. Because that guy never had any corroborating evidence, just like the guy who said that vaccines cause autism.
Yeah, that guy lost his medical license.
I hope that Evan Thomas lost his journalism license. I don't know.
Probably not. I feel like you can get away with a lot of false, like, reporting in journalism.
You know what? You're right. Anyway, there are others who say that he was there to visit a friend, which is what Herf said himself. But no matter the reason, that moment in that Texas hospital would change the lives of Bonnie, Herf, 45 other people, and 25 years later, the entire world.
God, that's crazy just how the domino effect is truly an incredible thing.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the countless people who joined the group and then left the group, like, throughout those 25 years.
That's true, yeah.
Because not everybody stayed in the group. 39 people died in 1997, but there were countless people who survived and, you know, joined the group, left the group, etc., you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. But anyways, Kate, you want to talk about our social media?
Yeah, sure. I'll talk about our social media. So
go for it.
So just to start it off, Dakota and I have our personal Instagrams. Dakota is at Dakota's Beard. Mine is Kate Ulrich at Kate Ulrich Fangirl. So feel free to follow us on there if you want a glimpse into our personal lives, see what we get up to. And then we have the Chardon Hay Instagram, which is Chardon Hay True Crime, and that's C-H-A-R-D-O-N, Jesus Christ, I can't fucking spell right now, C-H-A-R-D-O-N-H-A-A-A-Y-T-C, nope, it's True Crime, T-R-U-C-R-I-M-E, holy shit.
Maybe you just spelled it. Hey, I'm sorry, I have to point out, you just spelled it T-R-U-C-R-I-M-E.
Maybe I shouldn't be doing social media tonight.
Do you want to do Patreon?
Sure, I'll do Patreon. It's scrolling at the bottom. It's down there.
you do Patreon. I will do social media. Our social media on Facebook is facebook.com/ Chardon Hay TC. That's C-H-A-R-D-O-N-H-A-A-A-Y-T-C. Our Instagram is at Chardon Hay True Crime. And you can see how to spell that right here on the screen. For those of you who are listening and not watching, it's C-H-A-R-D-O-N-H-A-A-A-Y, True Crime. You can check us out on Twitter, Chardon Hay TC. And don't forget to check out our personal Instagrams like Kate was talking about. Mine is at Dakota's Beard. Kate's is at Kate Ulrich Fangirl. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's our social media.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to say. So that's our social media. And then for additional true crime content from us, you can subscribe to our Patreon. And that is scrolling down at the bottom for those of you who are watching live. And then for those of you who are listening, it's patreon.com/ShardenHayTC. So same as our Facebook spelling. And there we have a few different series that we're working on. So we've got our 50 States of Serial Killers, Unsolved, Celebrities Who Kill.
That's our newest series, and it's been really interesting so far. Kate, what do you think of our Celebrities Who Kill?
It is definitely interesting. It was, I don't know that many stories, but this first episode that we did, we talked about three different people. The only one that I was even remotely familiar with was Ted Kennedy, surprisingly.
Well, he's a Kennedy, and we just did 7 goddamn episodes on Kennedys, so, you know. There's that.
That's true. But like, you know me, I don't keep involved in like any sort of like politics stuff. So the fact that that's the only one that I knew about at all is just, it's kind of funny for me specifically.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I get what you're saying. And to be fair, I do tell Kate about certain political things. Like when it comes time to voting and Kate's like, what do I vote for? I will break it down for her and help her understand which one she's voting on and everything. Like, we've done that since she was old enough to vote.
Yep. Yeah. You've known me since I was voting age.
I've known you since you were 17, dude.
God, you've known me since before I was voting age.
Yeah. I mean, it was like a couple months before you turned 7, before you turned 18, but still.
Yeah, but still. What were we? Cooking. Oh, we were talking about Patreon. That's what
cooking
we were talking
with
about.
Cooking with Dorothea Puente.
Yes. So, did I already say Write a Serial Killer?
No, you didn't.
Yes. Yeah, so, Write a Serial Killer is another one. At some point, we're going to be going over methods of torture. We did recently finish our Methods of Execution series.
We did.
That one was pretty interesting as well. I didn't like any of it because it made me anxious, but it was very interesting and informative.
Yeah. Methods of Torture is one that I'm really excited to do because I have been to the Medieval Torture Museum in San Gimignano, Italy, and that place was fascinating. It was also haunted as shit.
Love that. Yeah. Fucking love that.
Love it. And I have decided we are going to bring back Cryptid Week for Patreon.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So Patreon, we are going to be bringing back Cryptid Week, where we are going to spend one episode talking about a specific cryptid.
Love that.
Because we don't want to only talk about crime. We do want to talk about like the paranormal and shit like that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there are some things that are like paranormal that are tied into true crime, like fun shit like that.
Yeah, exactly. Like Alcatraz, for example. The prison Alcatraz in San Francisco Bay. Well, number one, there was the escape of Alcatraz, but also that place is haunted as fuck.
Oh, okay. I was just like, is there a monster in Alcatraz?
Yes, white people, but you know, there's that.
Oh shit, you're right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That island was originally owned by the Native Americans, but we're not here to talk about Alcatraz. We are here to talk about Heaven's Gate. So check out our Patreon for extra content and let's get back in it. So Bonnie and Herf met at the hospital in Houston. And at this point, they're both having a hard time. Herf had a handful of failed relationships. Bonnie is in the process of getting a divorce and is dealing with her ex being more than unsupportive of her spiritual beliefs. And they're both lonely. They both want a partner who will love and support them. And in that meeting, they found themselves a partner who would love and support each other until the days of their deaths.
That's a weird way to word that.
Well, okay. I understand what you're saying. However, Bonnie died about a decade before Herf, so different days of deaths.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I guess I get that.
All right. So anyways, after they met, Bonnie offered to do Herf's astrological chart. And in doing it, they decided that they had known each other in a previous life and that they had important things to do in their current lives. In their own words, in an interview, Herf described the meeting with Bonnie as, "I felt that I had known her forever. I wanted someone to do an astrological chart on me, so I ran right out to my car and got my birth certificate." Because apparently that's a thing that Herf did, just kept his birth certificate in his car. But anyway, in another interview in 1976, it was said, "It was as if we were being guided by forces greater than ourselves. We were snatched from our previous lives. We went through a very confusing period of transition."
Doesn't Bonnie have kids?
Yeah.
And how'd they feel about this whole thing?
Well, okay. So I don't really know the whole living situation with Bonnie's kids at this point. I know that Terry lived with Bonnie. I don't know about the twins or Joey, the last one. So it's the twins, Joey, Terry. I don't know the twins' names. But anyway, so I don't know where the twins or Joey lived, possibly with their dad. Who knows? Anyways, so Terry said in the Heaven's Gate podcast that she remembers every day she would wake up, and she was a drummer. So every morning she'd wake up and she'd drum for a while, and then she would come downstairs. And she said that a lot of the time after meeting Herf, he'd be there at the house when she woke up. Now, pretty soon, the two decided to open a New Age bookstore together called the Christian Arts Center. Now, even though it was named the Christian Arts Center, they kind of went away from the whole Christian thing, the whole Christianity thing. I don't know. Anyway, so they sold New Age books and offered classes on all kinds of New Age things like mysticism and like spirituality and all of that stuff. But the New Age movement was hard to market in Texas at that time, and honestly, probably still is. I don't know. If you are listening in Texas, let us know if you are able to find New Agey kind of stuff easily. I don't know. Anyway. but the bookstore failed a few months later.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. See, they should have moved it out here to California because, like, that shit would have thrived. There's bookstores like that all over the place out here.
You can't throw a rock without hitting a New Age bookstore in California. I'm just saying.
Truly. Truly.
Yeah. I used to get my stepdad to take me to the New Age bookstore across the street from his store. Like, anytime he took me to his store, I was like, I want to go to that bookstore where they sell pentagram shit. And he was like, all right, fine. I used to buy like books on Wicca and stuff like that all the time.
Yeah, there's a bookstore down here that I actually helped. I helped a little bit with their renovation. I helped them paint like one of their rooms, which was kind of fun.
Oh yeah, I remember that. That was when you were hanging out with that girl that was a horrible influence.
Yeah, she got me out of the house.
Yeah, I get it, but still.
But anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, they had a good idea, just the wrong audience.
Yeah, wrong location. Great idea, wrong location. Also, I just moved my head a little bit, and you can see Herf behind me right there.
Yeah.
Right in here. Anyway, so the next thing they did was they opened a retreat center out in the country called The No Place, and that's spelled K-N-O-W, as in you get to know things, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, again, they taught classes on New Age topics and started to focus on their own spiritual enlightenment. They met with an occultist who had several interests in Hindu mysticism, where he ended up renaming them, Nettles getting the name of Shakti Devi, which means powerful goddess, and Herf getting the name Sri Pravana, which roughly translated means auspicious mantra. And while those names didn't last, the effect of the meeting did last. They were no longer each singular people. They were a team, something that they would go on to realize in more Christian terms, the two.
Like the two, like from the Bible?
Yes. So the two in the Bible are from the book of Revelations, also known as the two witnesses. Now, since Kate has more of a Christian upbringing than I did, I'm going to let her read from the book of Revelations.
Oh God, I spent 3 years avoiding reading the Bible. Now you're going to make me read a Bible verse.
Yep. It's actually kind of a long one too. So get into it, Kate.
Oh God. All right. This is for
you're
you.
You're welcome.
All right, Revelations 11, verses 3 to 11. And I will appoint my two witnesses, and they will prophesy for 1260 days, clothed in sackcloth. They are the two olive trees and the two lampstands, and they stand before the Lord of the earth. If anyone tries to harm them, fire comes from their mouths and devours their enemies. This is how anyone who wants to harm them must die. They have power to shut up the heavens so that it will not rain during the time they are prophesying. And they have the power to turn the waters into blood and strike the earth with every kind of plague as often as they want. That really doesn't seem like a power that anybody should have.
No, but okay. Definitely not.
Now, when they have finished their testimony, the beast that comes up from the abyss will attack them and overpower and kill them. Their bodies will lie in the public square of the great city, which is figuratively called Sodom and Egypt, where also their Lord was crucified. For 3.5 days, some from what? Oh, I agree. I just couldn't figure out like the inflection for how to say that.
Okay.
For 3.5 days, some from every people, tribe, language, and nation will gaze on their bodies and refuse them burial. The inhabitants of the earth will gloat over them and will celebrate by sending each other gifts because these two prophets had tormented those who live on the earth. But after the 3.5 days, the breath of life from God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and terror struck those who saw them. Then they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, "Come up here." And they went up to heaven in a cloud while their enemies looked on.
Your face. Oh my God, Kate.
The Bible is such a weird fucking book.
It's fan fiction. You know that.
It truly is, yeah. Canon Jesus, like canon Bible stories are way better than like the actual written version.
Yeah. Anyway, so this is what those two believe themselves to be or would become. They closed the No Place in 1973 and then went on a spiritual wandering throughout North America. And it's during that pilgrimage that they decided that they were the two, and they came to the decision not to give up their New Age studies, but to combine their knowledge of the Christian Bible, giving themselves a new theory of belief. So they basically were like, you know what? We're going to mix the Christian Bible with like God, I just smacked my microphone. We're going to combine the Christian Bible with theosophy, with New Age stuff, with Hinduism, with all this other crap.
You see, like, that actually sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, don't get me started. Listen, I'm sure that if I had been alive in the 70s, I would have at least followed them for a little bit.
Yeah, you would.
Yeah.
And I don't say that in a judgmental way.
Like, no, I know. But it's like that kind of like belief system and everything is definitely the kind of thing that I would just be like, fucking sign me up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because if you take the best parts from each of those, you can have something that's fucking fantastic.
Oh, 100%. Like, but they didn't just take the best parts. They took some of the worst parts as well.
Oh, yeah, of course. But like, even then, like at the very least, that is captivating.
It's fascinating. It's damn good sci-fi is what it is.
Yeah.
Which unfortunately is a little Scientology-y, but you know, we'll get into that.
That's different. That was a money-making scheme.
Liz, I've read Dianetics.
Yeah.
I have. I don't see it as a religion. I see it as damn good sci-fi. Well,
it was sci-fi. It was mediocre sci-fi. Don't give him that much credit.
You're right. You're right. Did you read Dianetics?
I did not, but like we basically got a summary of it when we had our Scientology section in high school, and it was just like, you know, he published all of these books and they like, you know, they sold, but like not well enough. Like him just being a, I almost said fan fiction writer.
Basically.
Him being a sci-fi writer was not the money-making scheme that he wanted it to be. Like, we're not here to talk about Scientology right now, so we can talk about L. Ron Hubbard a whole last other day.
That is a whole other series. That one's going to be at least 8 parts.
Yeah, that's going to be a big chunk of our time.
Yeah, I haven't decided when we're going to do that one, but it's definitely going to happen. But anyways, so they declared that they would be martyred, resurrected, and then a UFO would descend to pick them up and anyone who followed them before bringing them to a heaven-like utopia. They would transform from their earthly bodies and turn into extraterrestrial beings that would be able to live indefinitely in the next level or the evolutionary level above human, something that they would believe until their deaths. The next level would be a reoccurring theme, even in the exit tapes, which we will talk about in the upcoming episodes.
This isn't even my final form.
Literally.
But yeah, so it's like a mixture of Christianity, theosophy, and UFOs.
Yeah, pretty much.
So how did they even like get followers? Because like, you know, there wasn't social media back then.
No, there wasn't. They returned to Houston and reconnected with an old customer from the bookstore and the No Place, Sharon. Sharon was their first follower. They talked about their new message with her, and Sharon decided after 6 days that she would follow them. She chose to do so as they did, deserted her family, and became a religious wanderer. She left her wedding ring behind and a note to her family, and just like that, she was the first of many throughout the years who would follow the two.
So what did she do exactly?
So she would, the two would tell her where they were going, and Sharon would go ahead and advertise their impending arrival and put up posters like this one. Hang on, let me pull this up real quick. Let me throw this up for everyone who's watching right now. Boom. There we go.
Ba-boom.
Ba-boom. And it says, for those of you who are watching and or who are listening and not watching, UFOs in San Francisco area. Why are they here? Who they have come for? When they will land? Two individuals say they were sent from the level above human and will return to that level in a spaceship UFO within the next few months. The man and woman will discuss how the transition from the human level to the next level is accomplished and when this may be done. This is not a religious or philosophical organization recruiting membership. However, the information has already prompted a number of individuals to devote their total energy to the transitional process. If you have ever entertained the idea that there may be a real physical level in space beyond the Earth's confines, you will want to attend this meeting. Monday, August 25th, 8 p.m., University of San Francisco, McLaren Hall, room 252-2130 Fulton Street, near the northeast corner of the Golden Gate Park.
And for those of you who can't see the image, we'll post it on our Facebook group after the show, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, like most of the people in the early days, Sharon eventually ended up leaving the two. After that, that had an immediate reaction for them. Sharon's husband charged Bonnie and Herf with credit card fraud for the use of Sharon's credit card. And Sharon claimed that she had let them use the card, but it still resulted in their arrests. They also discovered that Herf had an arrest warrant for the theft of a rental car, and he was arraigned and transferred to Missouri, where he spent 6 months in prison. Now, during this time, Bonnie returned to work as a nurse, and you'd think that this would have cooled off. They would have cooled off in this time, right?
But then there wouldn't be a story here.
Exactly.
So then what happened?
So then what happened is there was a very brief trial. Herf was sentenced to time served, and in March of 1975, he was released and Bonnie rejoined him. Now, she found that he had taken that time alone to give him, in some words, a significant growth. He decided that he and Bonnie were not humans after all, and that they were extraterrestrials inhabiting human bodies, and would go on to give a different explanation over the years for that belief. But it sounds, like I said, kind of Scientology-ish to me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Talk about Scientology, right?
Yeah, seriously. Hey, y'all, L. Ron Hubbard called. He'd like his theology back.
Yeah, right. No kidding. So anyway, they decided that they were going to keep going with their plan and their path and went to Ojai, California, a town that is about 20, 25 minutes away from where I grew up. It's definitely the kind of place that you would go to, though, if you wanted to start a new age religion. Like, no, it really is. I'll take you to Ojai someday. Anyway. So they began to branch out, talking to religious groups and people who were interested and associated with new alternative religions and beliefs, sending out mailers to those people and groups, which, if you ask me, is kind of a brilliant way of doing things.
Did it work, though?
Kind of, but it wouldn't be until April 9th, 1975, that things really did work out for the two.
Ooh, what happened on April 9th, 1975?
So, what happened was they had a meeting in L.A. led by Clarence Klug. Klug? Klug? How would you pronounce that? Klug?
I guess Klug.
I guess. Anyway, so they had a meeting led by Clarence Klug and met in the house of a psychic named Joan Culpepper. The two were charismatic, and they explained their philosophy and of the between 41 and 80 people who attended. The statements vary very heavily.
No kidding.
There is a lot of discrepancy in those numbers.
That's a big gap there. But anyway, go ahead.
Of the between 41 and 80 people who attended, statements vary, like I said, between 23 and 27 people decided to join them. Now, that could have been because of their charisma, or it could have been because Clarence Klug's group was at a bit of a crossroads. But either way, the two had some of their largest numbers so far.
Yay!
I guess, yay.
They use their charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent.
Is that what they did?
Yep.
Okay. Anyways, so, yeah. So,
yeah. So that's when they started getting more followers, right?
Well, that would be the first of their big collections of people who would leave their lives and follow them. But the one that most of the Heaven's Gate documentaries and podcasts focus on is the one from Waldport, Oregon.
What happened there?
Well, that one made the news. And Walter Cronkite actually reported on that one.
Oh, okay.
Good old Walter Cronkite. Yeah. So, on September 14th, 1975, more than 250 people attended their meeting, according to an article that was written about it. The context was vaguely biblical. And the implication was that you would be able to leave in a UFO. Now, some of the people who would go on to die in 1997 had been recruited in Waldport in 1975.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always forget like how long this ordeal was.
Yeah, 1975 to 1997.
That's so crazy.
it's not like Jonestown, which like only took a couple of years, you know?
Yeah, this was like a long-term thing. So, I mean, like,
this was a lifestyle for some people. I mean, some people joined this group when they were like 18.
I guess points for longevity.
We'll talk about the long-lasting effects of the group and everything in the upcoming episodes, but like, yeah.
Tune in for that.
Yeah, exactly. But the two explained that the followers would leave for a better place on another planet and that everyone could join them by completing their training under their teachings, basically. We have all the answers. You need all the answers. Follow us and you'll get to have a ride on a UFO.
Yeah. And like, you know, like I was saying before, you know, humans want to believe in something, and also like humans just have an inherent need to like know the answers to like anything, you know.
Humans have an inherent need to follow those who claim that they have the answers, be it Christianity, be it unfortunately the Nazis.
Yeah.
You good?
Yeah, sorry. I just heard my brother do the Soulja Boy, you! And nothing else.
He is a strange child, isn't he?
He truly is.
I'm going to buy you some soundproofing for your door.
Yeah. Got to put it on the outside.
Right. No, if you put it on the inside, you still won't be able to hear out. But anyway, continue.
Yeah,
continue with your thought.
But yeah, like humans just kind of have like this inherent curiosity of like, you know, if you haven't thought about it, if somebody is suddenly just like, do you want to know the answer to the universe? Just. Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. No, one of the moments that still upsets me to this day is when I got myself really fucked up on cold medicine. I listened to a Timothy Leary record. You don't know who Timothy Leary is, but he was a big guy in the 60s. Anyway, he was like very similar to these guys, honestly. I have all the answers. You can be anyone this time around. You can do anything this time around. I fell asleep listening to that bullshit on a bunch of cold medicine and dreamed that I found the answers to the universe. However, just as I reached total enlightenment, the phone rang and I woke up.
Rip.
I am still angry about that, and it has been over 10 years.
You just gotta recreate it. Just get fucked up on a bunch of cold medicine again.
You think I haven't tried that?
Yeah, I know. I'm sure you have.
I've gotten fucked up on everything and tried to recreate that. It doesn't come back.
Yeah. You had one shot.
Anyways, so the two claimed that the next level of which they spoke of was purely physical and a corporeal place and not an ethereal plane of existence like in the Bible. Once it was reached through physical travel aboard a UFO, one needed to bring one's physical body in order to do so. They offered to teach a process that they called the human individual metamorphosis, which would actually become the first version of their name. So the first version of their name was not Heaven's Gate. The first version of their name was the Human Individual Metamorphosis. They were also known as the Total Overcomers Anonymous. And finally, the Class.
Interesting.
Yeah. They also called themselves the Two, Guinea and Pig, Bo and Peep, and eventually the Lasting T and Doe.
Wait, hold on. What was that first one again? It was like the human something.
The Human Individual Metamorphosis.
Individual Metamorphosis.
Are you writing that down?
Well, I'm trying to come up with something funny here. So hold on a second.
I will wait.
Hmm.
I just accidentally dropped my paper. But anyways, go on.
The Human Individual Metamorphosis Belief Observatory. HIMBO.
Okay. There you go. HIMBO.
That's literally just what I was trying to do. I was trying to turn it into HIMBO.
I'm sure Herf would appreciate that. Yeah.
I would like to say that I came up with that on the first try, so I'm kind of proud of that, honestly.
There you repeat it one more time.
The Human Individual Metamorphosis Belief Observatory.
You could have said belief organization.
Well, observatory still works, you know.
Yeah, it works. It's still an O, but yeah. Organization sounds a little bit more concise, but anyways. Sure.
I came up with it on the first try. It took me 10 seconds. Just let me have this.
Okay, you're welcome. You have it. So anyways, they would continue to go up to Oregon, and it was in Waldport that they got the national attention. They put up posters, the posters that we put up on the screen and that we'll be putting up on our Facebook saying, you know, UFOs, why are they here? Who have they come for, et cetera. And it may not have seemed like a recruitment meeting at first, but they still managed to recruit somewhere between 7 and 20 followers from Waldport, all of whom immediately got rid of their belongings, severed all ties with family and friends, and left town. Their sudden disappearances led to concern both locally and across the U.S. after the national news outlet picked up the story. And like we said, Walter Cronkite reported on this, which was actually interesting listening to Walter Cronkite talk about it. Just saying.
I'm sure it was interesting listening to Walter Cronkite talk about anything.
People of Oregon have experienced a UFO organization. That's my Walter Cronkite impersonation.
It was a little Nixon-y, but I got the vibe.
But I mean, you know, they sounded very similar, okay? Nixon and Cronkite sounded very similar.
Okay, I'll give you that. I will give you that.
Come on. You've listened to both of them talk before, haven't you?
Nixon a little more than Cronkite, but I know that Walter Cronkite had that whole, like, and that's the way it is.
And that's the way it is. Yeah. Exactly. No. But anyways, the controversy eventually settled down. The group's numbers grew and shrank. And that's something that continued to happen for many, many years. Literally 25 years of this. That's something that a lot of people don't think about. They all think, oh, like, they associate Heaven's Gate with the 90s, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They associate all of this with, like, the 90s. They associate it all with, like, this is just, like, a thing that happened super suddenly. But no, this is 25 years of... Yeah. You know, of growing and fading from national headlines and everything, and this is all something that joined the collective knowledge and then faded from the collective knowledge many times, and eventually it sort of just blew up, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and, like, you know, that was kind of the point that I was making earlier. You know, like, I always forget just how far back this goes, too.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that Bonnie and Herf had known each other for a long ass time, but, like, I forgot that, like, the organization itself started, like, as soon as it did in their relationship. Ow, sorry, just caught my
It was nail basically on. Immediate with them. Like, yeah. They basically were just like, hey, what's your name?
Bonnie.
I'm Herf.
Cool. Want to start a cult?
Yeah.
Cool.
And then that's it. That's, excuse me, that's what happened.
That's the origin of Heaven's Gate.
Indeed, indeed. Oh God, can you imagine Billy and Bob during this time?
Oh God, Billy would get sucked in.
Hey, Billy.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
So yeah, so listen, I was in Oregon, right? And I went to this group because they said that they seen UFOs, and you know, I really like UFOs.
Yeah, I know how much you like them UFOs. You got that telescope outside in your backyard.
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, I say that it's for the kids, but it's really for me because the kids don't really give a shit about UFOs. Yeah. So anyways, so I was thinking I'd go and check this group out because they said that they know the UFOs. So I went, and then like 30 people went missing.
Bob.
Yeah.
What do you mean they went missing?
They just went and disappeared there. I don't know what to tell you. They joined those people that were like, oh, hey, we know how to get on a UFO. And then they all went missing.
Bob.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold on.
Yeah.
You don't.
What?
You don't think that they got abducted, do you?
I don't know. I don't know, Billy. That's why I'm calling you.
You're not still in Oregon, are you?
No. I'm back home. I had to get out of there as soon as that happened. You know, and then I saw on the news that Walter Cronkite was talking about it, and I was like, oh my God. And then they said my name is one of the missing, but I wasn't missing. I'm here. I don't know. How do I get in touch with Walter Cronkite?
Oh man, that's a pretty tall order trying to get in touch with Walter Cronkite. Like,
I know, right? Like, I don't know what to do.
He's like the most famous man in the world.
I know, right? What do I do? How do I tell Walter Cronkite that I'm not missing?
Maybe write him a letter. Oh my God.
What?
Bob.
What? What?
Could you imagine if you wrote a letter into Walter Cronkite and he read your letter on the news?
Oh my God. Can you imagine if he sent me a signed photo?
Oh my God. You'd have to hang that over your mantle in your fireplace.
I know, right? It would go right up there with my signed photo from the monkeys. What?
I don't know. I just didn't expect that.
You know, what's really funny is I actually have a signed photo from all the monkeys.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's why I went the way I did. And so listen, I am terrified that they are thinking that I am dead or that I joined a UFO group, and I don't know what to do about that. Can you help me call Walter Cronkite?
Yeah, I'll help you call Walter. Mary Sue Ellen knows where you are, right?
Yeah. She knows where I am. I'm at home. I'm in the garage.
Okay.
I'm not leaving the garage, though.
Why don't you want to leave the garage,
Bob? I don't want to leave the garage in case the UFOs come and get me.
Bob.
What?
They only came for the people in Oregon. You're not in Oregon no more.
Yeah, I know, but I went to that meeting. So what if they were like, oh, hey, let's go get that guy from the meeting, and then they pick me up, and then I have to go to the UFO land?
You may have a point there. I'm going to call Mary Sue Ellen.
What did you say?
I said you may have a point there, Bob.
Okay. That's what I thought. Because, I mean, you know, because, yeah, I don't want them to come and get me from the garage because I'm comfortable here. I made a little bed for myself in the back of the car, and I'm going to wait it out until this is all over with, okay?
All right, Bob. You do that, and okay. I'll come bring you food later or something, all right? Bring you some beer.
Bring me a pizza and some beer.
All right.
And wings.
All right. Sounds good, Bob.
Okay, love you, bye.
Love you, bye. Yeah, Mary Sue Ellen.
Yeah, who is this?
It's Billy.
Well, hey, Billy.
I just got a quick question for you.
Uh-huh.
Bob came home, right?
Yeah, he's in the garage.
Okay. Is he saying, like, crazy stuff, like how he's not leaving the garage? Oh, yeah.
It's fine. He's fine out there. He made himself a little bed in the backseat of the car, and, you know, it's fine.
Okay. He's
got a sink out there, he's got his little papers. I make sure he gets the newspaper every day. I leave a cup of coffee outside the garage door for him.
Mary Swellen.
Yeah.
I think he might be going a little crazy. He thinks the UFOs are going to get him and the garage is the place he's safe. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, it's fine. He's not hogging the bed right now. So, you know what? I'm fine with it.
Okay, well, I guess as long as you're fine with it, then that's fine.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. It's fine. He can just have his fun out in the garage. It's okay. Are you going to come see him?
Yeah, I'm going to bring him some pizza and beer.
Okay, that sounds good. Bring him light beer. I don't want him getting fat.
I know. Of course I'll bring him light beer.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right, love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Mary Sue Ellen is such a supportive wife.
Just, all right, as long as you're good.
Can I just say, it was really fun actually being Mary Sue Ellen for the first time ever.
Yeah, Bob's got Mary Sue Ellen, and I think Billy's got Deb.
I honestly don't remember. We'll figure it out. Who cares?
Billy and Bob care, Dakota.
Okay, you're right. Billy and Bob care. But anyways, yeah, that's basically what happened. They were like, oh, maybe there's aliens, etc. But that's where we're going to leave this episode. Obviously, we got to get a Billy and Bob conversation in there somehow.
And we managed to get it right at the end.
We did. But you know what? They deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And we introduced Mary Sue Ellen.
We did. We officially got Mary Sue Ellen in here.
Yeah. So anyways, Kate, what are your thoughts so far on Heaven's Gate?
I mean, they're just trying to connect with people, man. They're just trying to get people together and like give them something to hope for.
Uh-huh.
So like at this point, I support them.
All right. Yeah. You know what? Like, listen, this is something that I have said for a very long time, and I will make this statement now instead of waiting until the end of the series. I truly hope that they found what they were looking for.
Yeah, definitely. Because I know how this one ends. I know how this one ends, and I don't want to give anything away, but like they were so sure of it. Like everybody who was part of the end was a willing part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I do agree. I hope that they got what they wanted from this.
I do too. I hope that they were able to find what they were looking for. I know that a lot of people are going to be like, but like, honestly,
like, what else are we supposed to hope for? Are we supposed to hope that like they did this and like got nothing? Like nothing, there isn't anything that's going to undo what they did. Mm-hmm. So all you can do is hope for the best for them, because
absolutely,
you know, this with like how other people's lives were affected, you know, I feel terrible for their families and everything, but for the people who were a part of this, all you can do is hope that what they did wasn't for nothing.
100%. 100%. And one of the really interesting things about this is that Nichelle Nichols from Star Trek, her brother was one of the people who killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So their family actually had a really great statement about this. And I'm going to look it up really quick, because I think that it's important to read.
Do we want to read it now or do we want to read this one when it comes closer to the end?
Let me find it really quick and I will decide. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh God, where is it? Yeah, here. No, they basically said the exact same thing that we said, that we hope that that they found what they were looking for and that they respect his decision. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we haven't exactly clarified that we respect their decisions to do what they did, but we do.
Yeah, we're not going to sit here and say like we're in favor of taking your own life.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
But this was something, this isn't that simple.
No. And you'll get to know more about that in the upcoming episodes. And I think that that's a good place to leave it. It's not as simple as it seems. And until next time, say goodnight, Kate.
Goodnight, Kate.
Goodnight. And I don't know.
Yeah, I don't really know for this one, honestly.
Respect people's decisions to their own religion.
I guess. Respect people's beliefs.
Yeah, we're going to go with that one. We'll see you all next week. Have a great night, everyone.